Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Hold That Podcast podcast. I am your host, Chris Branch, here with Brody Miller. We are both of The Athletic. How are you today, Brody?
I am doing well. I feel like the craziest month in like New Orleans and Louisiana sports is well, it's not over, but it's kind of wrapping up, which is good for my sleep schedule. From the Final Four to coaching firings and hirings to spring ball, and like I feel like a busier spring ball than ever before with the new staff and all of that, to the Zurich Classic this past week, the Pels playoff run, which is of course still going, but spring ball is over, Zurich Classic is over.
Yeah, it's still going.
Staffs are stable.
Pels are tied 2-2.
Yeah,
we're
you and
NBA
I were at
state
game
now.
Three together for our listeners, so we're not just podcast friends, we are go to Pels game friends.
We had a hold that Pels game on Friday, which
hold that flock.
Maybe it was our fault that the game we didn't go to, they lost, but this is an NBA state now, Brody. I hope LSU can take a back seat
for at least a little bit.
For a little while.
But no, yeah, I'm doing so well. I'm sorry. How are you?
Good. I'm good. Like yourself. It's been a busy sports time. I mean, you know, I'm doing all the sports stuff from my couch. So it was nice to actually go to a sports game, be in the atmosphere, be with the people.
Yeah, we made some buddies. Yeah, it was a great time.
It was great. But the listeners want to know about LSU football.
Fine.
By and large. You were at the spring game. I find the spring game always so fascinating because it provides so much fodder for us to overanalyze and freak out about when it is essentially a large-scale practice.
Yes.
That everyone gets to go to.
Especially so this year more than ever, because it wasn't even teams. It was just offense versus defense.
Right. It was. Yeah, there wasn't even the facade of a competition and like, oh, the purple team, if they win, we're going to get like the better dinner or something like that, that I feel like less teams and Coach O teams got. So tell me how it was. What was the atmosphere like in Tiger Stadium? You know, I wasn't there. I had a lot of people I know that was there. Was there a vibe? Or was it just a practice with a bunch of people in the stands?
Yeah, it was just a practice with a bunch of people. I mean, like, yeah, there was a decent crowd out there for Kelly's Tiger Walk, which is, you know, for a spring game, that's solid. You know, it's a decent amount of people. It's always funny though watching the spring game because they smartly just section off the stadium. So like all of the fans are only in like one section. And like if there were more, obviously.
Okay.
So like, but it's funny because the section they put them in is the section beneath the press box. So we actually can't see it. So in our view, it just looks like it is completely empty in there. But yeah, there was like, you know, there was a half decent spring ball crowd, but nothing to write home about. It wasn't like an energy or anything like that. But yeah. I mean, as you said, spring games are so tricky because it's basically just like really hard trying to figure out what you can take something from and what you should kind of just ignore or just yada yada it. And like, all right, you know, I think like one good example of a one you could take away from like a past year is, okay, Dwight McLuthern, you know, they were so down on corners that Dwight McLuthern had to match up with Kayshon Boutte the whole time or a lot of the time. And it was like, oh, crap, Dwight McLuthern's like locking him up, you know, and then he ended up having a pretty nice year. I think that's a decent example of like, oh, you can maybe take something from that. He's going up against this guy. But then there's like Joe Burrow looked iffy in the 2019 spring game. And it's like, hey, guys, he was just kind of screwing around out there. Like, let's not worry about that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's what always makes him so interesting. I think this one was – I think the interest from this one is just kind of trying to figure out what this team's going to look like, what it's going to be, like how Kelly's starting to get the pieces together and just a sense of, I don't know, getting like a discipline and a structure and all that. And yeah, I think we learned a good bit. We saw some guys really stand out, some guys we've been hearing about all spring. People finally got to watch show it, you know, and things like that.
Well,
so
yeah,
I think you can take those things while like I'm not going to overanalyze the ins and outs of the defense because, again, and I'll repeat this a lot, and Kelly even came out and said this, which I loved. He's like, we played one coverage maybe two fronts. Like, they don't do anything different. So, like, eventually, which we'll get to, eventually the running game was able to just go to town on the defense because, like, yeah, it was pretty clear what they were doing every play and they could just adjust. So, like, there's just this constant battle of what can you evaluate and what can you not.
Well, yes, and to give our listeners a roadmap, we are Brody wrote a great story that's up on The Athletic going through some of his views. We're going to do some of that. We're going to get more in depth than he did in his story. We're going to go over some offense, some winners and losers. I think we have to start with the quarterbacks, though, as always. My sources on the ground told me that all the quarterbacks kind of played equal reps. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I actually do think equal, maybe not the right word, but like all three of them, the three main ones. Actually, Walker Howard looked solid too, but all three.
I know Howard played. I was going to ask you about that too.
Yeah, I think he did less than the others, but like he also had some good moments. He was fine. You know, he's early enrollee. I think it's safe to say all three like made the case for themselves in a valid way, not just like it's a spring game. Like, no, I think all three had really cool, impressive moments. I think it is fair to say Nussmeier had the best day. But like, again, I always try to like over hit everyone in the head with the context of like certain players are meant to thrive in those settings. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. It's like, you know, a running back, like a power back always looks great in a spring game too, you know, or stuff like that. Like, I think Garrett Nussmeier was perfect for this setting, but still, no, he looked really, really good. He had, I counted like four or five just dimes, two of them that weren't even caught, but it wasn't his fault. They were just kind of went through the guy's hands where you're just like, oh, that's a throw no one else is making. He just makes some of those plays running around, hitting guys in stride. I mean, he had the best numbers too. He had, you know, there's one where he basically, I forget who he hit on the sideline, but he threw like a perfect pass down to the right corner over a cornerback where only he could get it, for like a 40-yard play. And then the next pass play does like a play action bootleg rollout and then hits Jack Besh with perfect touch in the corner. You know, just like he just looked like a dude. But
this is we're just going to call this the Nussmeier agenda until they name a starting quarterback.
No, because no, I have to. No, I'm not doing that because I actually got to like notice.
No, not us. I'm just saying his surprising candidacy for the starting quarterback continues to be a thing. So the Nussmeier agenda is out there.
Exactly. Now, and I have to get a little defensive, not to you, to because I noticed like some people like some I noticed the you know some of the podcasts out there like. I mean, like, who's pushing this narrative that Nussmeier's the top guy? And, like, and I'm like, and it was LSU? Probably partially toward me. And I'm just like, it's not really a narrative. I actually, like, made very clear I am not saying he's this front runner in any way. I don't even think he's the main number one right now. It's actually just saying I think he's having a really good spring. LSU coaches have flat out told me he's been really good. And I think he's in it more than people think. Not he's the front runner. I think he's in it more than people realize. And that's what that story was about. But it's like the best part. This is just a Brody tangent. You just got to let me cook. And it's like that's one of my favorite parts of just media discourse. It's just like the way it goes from like, hey, you should be watching him to then other people saying, man, people are pushing Nussmeier too hard. And it's like, no, we're actually just saying he should get some look. It's just exhausting. So that's just how I feel right now. But yeah, he looked really good. But the thing is, and we'll keep going through the quarterbacks if you'd like.
Yes.
I think all of them really had moments because like Miles Brennan did the least cool stuff, right? But he just looked sharp. And I think that's kind of been my theme to you all spring. It's just he looks like the guy who's most kind of in command of the offense, for lack of a better word. Kind of sounds corny, but like or overly simplistic. But, you know, he was doing a lot of quick decision, safe check down, not check down throws, but safe move the chains throws, you know, a lot of like 8-yard outs and first downs. And just like, I think I remember like one real deep shot, which by the way was a really nice pass that just didn't get brought down. I think he just looked like he knows how to run the offense. And I think there's something maybe to that because the one thing we really know about Brennan is his deep balls, right? We've seen it all spring. Mm. We saw it in 2020. He's very good at those. You know, he has this big arm and he can make those big plays. So it is, I mean, I don't want to like pretend this is some big storyline, but no, it's just, it meant, I guess it is telling, you know, he was just really showing he could do that part of his game too. And Ryan Kelly after the game, if you want to call it a game, was he even like when going through the quarterback said like, what we love about Miles is, you know, he knows what he's doing with the football. He takes care of the football and that. So I think you can take something from that. Like, I think Miles is probably the most efficient of the three, even if he was the least exciting. But I would argue he's probably the most exciting all spring, so it's not a bad thing. And then Jaden Daniels had the worst technical passing day. Like, I think he was like 3 of 9 when it was all said and done. But, and there's rushing, don't even look at rushing numbers for like, cause it's just fake. But he did actually look impressive to me. Like, some of his plays where he would just take off running, like, you could tell if it was a live play, it would have been a big play. Like, he had 15 right. yards of space anyway. And he would have been, when it's live, I think he probably could have broken some tackles and made something out of it. You see, like, oh, when he gets going, he's going to be actually tough to stop. And he's got enough size where it's not going to, like, he's easy to just take out. So I'm really interested in him. And also, he did have a really nice throw in the right corner to, I believe it was Brian Thomas for, like, 39. Yeah. No, yeah. Yeah, 39 yards. And he just, yeah, he had some other throws that were really good that got batted down. I don't think he looked bad passing at all. Actually, I think he looked better than his numbers show. So all three really had moments to me where I'm like, oh, that's the case. And they're all different cases, which makes it interesting too. So Kelly said right, afterward, which I thought was really accurate. He's like, I actually don't think we made it harder on ourselves after today to make a decision. Like, they made it more tough to figure out who's on top.
It's a good problem. And that's the most fascinating thing to me is that they're all three very different quarterbacks. So,
and you know what else that might be good for? It could be wrong, but that they made it even harder, which means it's less likely someone might need to book it, you know, to get out of there. If you are worried about that, like,
okay, I could see both sides of that though. Like,
yeah, cause the Burrow thing,
if three guys are proving themselves to the coaches that they are worthy of being an SEC starter, somebody else is going to think that too.
Yeah. No, I mean, well, they already think that, right? Like, I think even before Saturday, there are plenty of teams around the country that would have picked up any of these three guys. So it's like,
yeah,
they always had a market for them.
I know, but you got some recent data. I'm just saying it could go both ways, but fascinated to see how it turns out. Speaking of transfers, really great segue for us here.
Oh yeah,
Corey Kiner. Who? We have running backs that not named John Emery that were stealing the show on Saturday. Armani Goodwin looked great. Trey Bradford looked great. I mean, what did you see from them?
Honestly, I think all the running backs had really good days. And of course, we throw the preface that we did before of, you know, they weren't showing anything. Like, they, you know, like we said, one coverage the whole game, maybe one or two fronts. Like, they just left it simple. So eventually the holes were there. But even when the holes weren't there, like even the first quarter when the defense looked dominant, though it wasn't about the running backs. The running backs just looked really good. Like, and I think that's, you know, John Emery barely played because he didn't even have to play. And by the way, this is actually worth, if you guys missed it, he obviously sprained his ankle, and he apparently, according to Coach Kelly, insisted on playing. He was like, they were like, hey, why'd you play him? And he's just like, he said to them, he was like, when the SEC season gets going, I am going to have to quite often go into games not being 100%. And I need to learn how to play not 100%. I need to learn how to play when I'm a little banged up and know and learn what that feels like. And I just think that's interesting. And it's maybe just a smaller anecdote of kind of the change or evolution you're seeing in Emery becoming the kind of guy you want to put your stock in, for lack of a better word.
Yeah. He keeps saying all the right things, man.
Exactly. So yeah, he had two runs that looked really good. Like, he didn't, you know, I think he had 4 for 24, which is good numbers. He looked good, but not too much to take from him, right? He looked great all spring though, mm-hmm. So you should be excited about John Emery. But it was the other guys who then got more time to cook, and Armani Goodwin just continues to look like he is going to be a star. Not even this year, just eventually. He has stuff when he gets a hole. Like, there was one inside run, right, where he's patient, waits, then the middle opens up, and he just takes his line. And once he has a line, he is one of the most explosive backs I've seen at LSU in a hot sec, because he's just big and strong, but he does accelerate quickly. So he took that for a hard 10-yard run, just cutting through that hole explosively. And then the next play, takes one to the outside, sees like a slight angle, and just outruns, I believe it was Wes Weeks in a corner, and just like beat them to the edge, even though they had a good line on him, because he's just that explosive. And there was another where he took like a short pass in the flat and just exploded for 24 yards. And it's like, it's not, and then, like, it's, I don't want to oversimplify, because I don't think it's like he's just some straight line one cut running back, but that is his superpower for sure. And he had other great plays. He had one where I forget who the tackler was, forgive me, but a linebacker, I believe, had him in the backfield, and he just kind of like kind of Clyde-esque, like just did like the shake off, like the lower your body and spit them off you kind of thing, and mm-hmm. and then took it for a few yards. He just had a really good day. I don't have the numbers in front of me right now, but he looked really good. But all of them did. I think Trey Bradford broke two different runs of 20 plus yards or more, and just like just the same kind of thing. His thing was always that he is a big play guy. He can explode. The comp was always. Not level-wise, but the comp was always ATN for him, and I could see that because he broke some big ones. And I've been saying all spring, I kind of always got the sense he might be their number two. Like, they like Bradford a lot. And then Josh Williams, who always gets forgotten, is a really good player, had some really nice plays. So I think the running backs are in a really, really good situation where you have to worry about all of them, and Noah Kane's coming back. So, yeah, I think that was my main story of the day, honestly, was just how those running backs look because they just look tough to tackle.
Totally. That's totally. Really encouraging.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Now let's get into some line talk, because I feel like the impressions I got from the spring game was that the defensive line looked great early. The offensive line, you were like, ooh, I don't know. And then the offensive line looked great. Like, they're opening these holes for these running backs. So tell me if my summary is wrong. The defensive line, the starters look great. Mason Smith, those frontline guys all looked awesome. And then maybe our worry about the offensive line is like some depth issues. Second team OL was not the star of the day, to put it nicely.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. And I know what you're getting at, obviously. Like, it was just a weird day for the line because it started weak, but the whole offense started weak. Kelly even said, I'll pull it up right now, like, he basically said, you know, the defense came out with all this energy, and he's like, I did not think our offense came out like with the mentality we hoped for this game. We had to get them thinking right at halftime, and like, you know, they had to be talked to and all that. And I think he was frustrated with just the offense as a whole, not just the O-line. But early in that game, to give the credit where it's due, yeah, I mean, Mason Smith, just as expected, just he wasn't even making tackles that often. He was just blowing up two linemen in the middle and then opening things up for others. And I believe we saw like that whole front seven was just flying around, blowing people up. Greg Penn made two or three really cool plays. One where he just burst up the middle looking like a Patrick Queen and made a tackle for 3 yards in the backfield. And Ollie Gay, Savion Jones had some really nice moments. BJ Ojulari, like that, Jaquelin Roy, Jacobian Guillory, all those guys just kind of blew people up, and that the linebackers looked good too. And then as the day went on, and as we said, I think part of this is the offense finally woke up and kind of just got like the right mentality, but also, you know, they kept it super simple. So eventually the O-line was able to kind of just know, like, here's what we're doing, and just like we're able to run at will. But still, like, they were proving they could block this really good D-line. Eventually, that O-line looked really good, and they opened up these massive holes for the back, like big holes in it, and made the running backs look good. So I think Will Campbell had a really good day at left tackle. Brian Kelly complimented him quickly, you know, that he continues to just look like he's good enough to hold as a starting tackle. I think Miles Frazier had some good moments. I think Charles Turner looked solid. So I think those guys look good. I think the noticeable thing in what you said, the second team O-line, just, you know, like they're playing a walk-on at right tackle right now. So I saw at least two times where Xavier Carter, the backup outside linebacker, who's had a really nice spring, by the way, just like untouched blew by him, looking like 2019 Caleb on Chase on. Like, and it's just like, oh, okay, I don't know what to do with that. And, you know, the difference is the second team D-line is good enough to start in the SEC. Well, the second team O-line, I think, just looks like the problem LSU's had, which is not news. We've known this is going to be a multi-year thing. And Marlon Martinez is still out. And Garrett Dellinger's out. And Emory Jones isn't here. You know, so that guys are going to get better. But, like, Fitzgerald West, who's, by the way, I think a really good prospect at center, freshman, early enrollee. This is not, like, digging on Fitzgerald West. But, yeah, like, he had a snap go way over the quarterback's head and got just completely blown up a few times by the Guillory and some others. You know, so it's just like, oh, that's the second team you have right now. So I think that's the more fair way to put it, is just like, they weren't, the second team O-line wasn't up to the matchup with a really good second team D-line.
Let's just say that that's going to be what they have to work on throughout the fall, and, you know, get some more guys in, get some people healthy. But I mean, this is the fan in me. I'm not going to, you know, be like, oh God, offensive line is going to be a problem all year. Not yet, but let's say if you have to pick a negative from this glorified practice, it was that, correct?
Maybe, yeah. I think the corners are probably the which, again, no Bernard Converse, no Seven Banks. You know, we knew that. But I just think, like, you still – it wasn't, like, the story of the game. But I think when I'm looking back now a few days later, that the receivers kind of had their way with the corners at times. And that's still going to be just the thing. You know, it's like – it was Demaryius McGee and Mekhi Garner out there. Like, what are you going to do? And Greg Brooks looked fine. But – so I think that's my main – but, yeah. And I'm not going to panic on the O-line depth, because I actually – and I've been saying this, you know, it's like – I think it's improved. It's just tricky in the spring game, because – when you actually go by what it's probably going to be in August, you actually feel decent at each two spots. You know, left tackle, it's, you know, Will Campbell's look really good, and Doomerville is improving. So let's say he's the next guy at left tackle. Or, like, you know, whoever, let's put it this way, whoever doesn't win the right tackle job, whether it's Wire or Doomerville, okay, you feel decent about one of them being the backup tackle. The guard spots, it's like, okay, let's say it's Frazier and Shorts. Okay, that's a pretty good front. And then Xavier Hill is a really good backup guard. And Marlon Martinez is out. He is either your backup center, which makes you feel better there, or he's the backup guard. You feel good about that. Garrett Dellinger, he's either the starting tackle or guard. Or, like, when you actually think of what the roster is going to look like, and Emory Jones, I think, is going to be good enough to compete for, like, a backup role. So it's like, when you really go through it in terms of an actual depth chart, you feel good about a second guy at each spot. But in this setting, when it's like there's just a first and a second, it's like, okay, they're in trouble. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, totally. Here's my ultimate fan spin. The defensive line is arguably one of the most polished units on this team, and maybe in the SEC. Yeah. And, you know, it's those guys are getting really good practice against arguably the best defensive line in the SEC. That's outlandish, but I'm going to go with that in my brain.
No, it's one of the three best D-lines, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I love it. We're going to continue on. Any other spring game stuff before we move on to draft prospects?
Yeah. Just a few things to throw out there. I think Jay Ward continues to look really good. He had, like, two plays where he just flew to the line of scrimmage. And, like, I just love watching Jay Ward play. Like, it's not an original take, but he just, like, plays football the fun way to watch. Like, he has, like, again, I make this comp in scale, not in literalness, but, like, yeah, like he has like a Tyrann Mathieu, just the way he bounces around. It's so fun to watch for me, where it's just like,
be careful with that one.
See, that's what I said. See, why would you add to that? You are better than that. I'm actually mad at you right now. Like, really? No, I'm saying scale.
I'm saying
he's not Tyrann Mathieu in ability. Just like the feel of him just hopping around and like floating just feels like him a lot. And he's just such a good tackler. I think that jumped out. I am optimistic on the starting linebackers between Penn Jones and Micah Baskerville and whatever that ends up being. So I think those are some ones. And then we didn't talk about the receivers, but like Malik Nabers made two or three highlight catches. Brian Thomas made a highlight catch. Like every one of those main receivers had at least one like 30 or 40 yard grab. So I think Kyron Lacy didn't have the best day, but I think he missed one or two good chances. But he also had Jack Besh had two touchdowns. Like, the receivers it's an obvious one, but they deserve to be mentioned at the very least. Bryce Langston had a nice sack where he kind of made a nice move on somebody. I mentioned Xavier Carter. Derek Davis. That's right. Derek Davis had, like, two consecutive plays where he had, like, a tackle at the line of scrimmage for a loss, and the next play, like, made a really quick, tough move on the ball and broke up pass in the flat. Like, so I think Derek Davis, his stock is increasing a little bit, and it has all spring where I think he's the second team safety. Clearly, it's probably him and Langlois right now. So, yeah, I think Derek, because no one talks about Derek Davis, but he was a top 100 recruit when he came in. So I just wanted to kind of shout out those guys, who did some small things that are worth noticing. Oh, and the one other, tight end's the biggest issue on this entire roster, but just like we kind of yada yada because you can scheme around tight end. But Cole Taylor had a good day, made some great catches, like tight possession grabs, and Ryan Kelly kind of unprovoked went out of his way to be like, Cole Taylor had a really good day. And he even talked about it in a way like acknowledging tight end's a problem. He's like, but he went for his exact words were he showed he wasn't just some pedestrian player, which is the meta comment. I just love that because basically acknowledging that he thinks he's a pedestrian player and like outplayed that. But yeah, I think Cole Taylor, they feel like he's at least somebody who you can play. And I think he had a good day. So I still think they're going to get a transfer, but that's worth mentioning as well. So that's most of them.
That sounds good. I'm not even worried about the wide receivers. You know, sorry if I glossed over that because that's a place.
I did too.
That's a place that LSU fans should be most excited about. But it's like nothing that happens can change my temperament about them. It is as high as it could be right now just because they look awesome. And Kayshon's not even playing. Yeah. Like Kayshon is still on the sidelines. So like it's not a question. I go to the bad stuff. What are the questions? QBs, O-line,
for sure.
Cornerbacks. And like cornerbacks, I'm kind of like just holding on to until they get fully healthy and we'll see what they look like in fall camp. Tight end, sure. But it's funny. Like the wide receivers should be one of the biggest storylines on this team because it is a stacked room. But I don't know. I'm just not worried about it. And that's why.
So yeah.
I apologize to our listeners who are asking, why am I not talking about how awesome Malik Nabers is going to be? I think he's going to be awesome. I can't wait to see him moss some dudes in the fall. I know it's going to happen. So
no, I get it.
Anyway, sure. That was a good recap. I hope if we missed any spring game takes, tweet at us, email us, yell at us. It's totally fine. We love glorified practice takes, but It is cool to see some new data on a Brian Kelly team at LSU, which is still weird for me to think about in a good way. I am excited. The quarterbacks are still top of my mind. What's going to happen there? And now we have to sit with no data for the rest of the summer, which love that for us. Let's move on to the draft. First round starts
favorite week of the
Thursday
year,
night. Do you like the new draft format of the last few years where it's dragged out?
No, I don't like that part, but I guess, okay. I don't know. I take that back. Like by the end of round one, you're kind of drafted out, like, cause you're putting like actual focus on each pick. So then it's like the second,
right.
You're like, all right, I'm good. And then two and three, it's like, all right, it feels more casual, you know, but like, and you're like, all right, yeah, I'd watch the second or third round, but I'll do other stuff on my computer. And then like, I'm not going to turn down on like Saturday having something in the background to watch with 4 through 7. Like, am I going to focus on
right.
it? No, but it's like something to do. So I say I didn't like it, but no, I actually do, because like in no world would I actually want to sit there and watch rounds 2 through 7 in one day. That's insane.
Here's my old man take is that I actually like the new format because it really makes what used to be just kind of like you tune in for 5 minutes to watch the first round and then you bail into an actual like event. And like, I really love how the NFL draft is moving city to city. They're making these huge experiences. I think it's really cool. The first round takes too long. Why is it a full night?
Yeah, I think I'd agree on all counts there. I think that's well put. Yeah. Like
it's going to be a tough night for us down here. Because the Pelicans game is going to be happening at the same time, Game 6 in New Orleans,
competing
for TV time. So let's talk
about...
I have two
TVs in my office, as you know, so I'm going to be in heaven.
Okay, double barrel. Well, let's make
another... Which one gets the sound on, though? Do I do Pels? Or I guess the draft doesn't inherently need sound, so yeah. Maybe I go.
Yeah, you do the Pels. It's an easy call. The only pick that LSU fans will be really waiting on is Derek Stingley.
Yeah.
And Derek Stingley is a fascinating case. And if you guys are athletic subscribers, which I hope you are if you're listening to this podcast, but if not, you should go take advantage of the multiple offers that we have out right now. Brody wrote a great story, a big feature on Derek Stingley and the aura and the conversation around him. And I was reading it and thinking as a fan about how complicated Derek Stingley's legacy is in my mind, you know, because as Brody pointed out in the story, he was the young Jim of the 2019 team who like my favorite memories of him from that year is that pick in the Auburn game, and then the SEC title game, him just absolutely owning Georgia was incredible to watch as for an 18 and 19 year old kid on the biggest stage, who kind of seemed like nothing really fazed him or affected him. And then he's almost the poster child of like how things went so wrong, and not because of his fault, but like LSU has all this potential, and 2020 and 2021 were just so bad. Derek Stingley is hurt the whole time. He plays half the time. He maybe unfairly gets this rep that he kind of quit on the team because of his draft stock, and like everybody knew he was a first round NFL cornerback in 2019, and he had to wait 2 extra years. So he played, and then he didn't play. And for LSU fans, remembering back to, it's kind of a similar situation when Leonard Fournette came back for his junior season and really struggled. And like, you know, he'd play a game, he'd tweak his injury, he'd sit out another game. They play him here and there, and the team wasn't great. Not as bad as these teams, but you know, everybody kind of forgot about Derek Stingley and how good he is. And if he can be healthy, he is, to me, the top cornerback in this draft. Sauce Gardner is awesome, but it's really affected his draft stock. You know, that rep that Stingley now has in the LSU fan base permeates to NFL scouts and NFL decision makers, other college coaches, wondering how much Derek wants it and how much of a drive he has. And I don't know what to think about it. Part of me thinks it's unfair, but part of me also, you can take away that, you know, he would have an injury tweak. And then maybe smartly for his, you know, he didn't want to aggravate his injuries a lot to tank his draft stock. But then he was so in the background, this wunderkind talent was just not playing for most of his last 2 years on the roster. So did I summarize that well, Brody?
No, I think you did. Yeah. I mean,
that track. I mean, what do you, you know, you've done a lot of reporting on this and a lot of reading too. Our colleague Bruce Feldman wrote a little bit where he talked to anonymous coaches. It's also a great read. That basically, from the college coaching and NFL perspective, does Derek Stingley want, like, does he have that passion about football? Which I think a lot of times is unfair. And I don't know Derek Stingley. I'm not inside his brain. None of us are. So it's hard for me to question that right now. But that is going to be the biggest question about where he gets drafted. You know, if there wasn't that question, he'd be a top 5 pick. He still could be a top 10 pick, but
and he still might. I mean, that's been the thing that's like worth acknowledging at the top. Like, this story obviously was ready to go like last week and ran today, but then like this morning you start seeing some outlets, ESPN, The Athletic, start, I think PFF did something too, where like you're starting to see more outlets report like, you know, I think he's actually starting to, you know, teams are starting to fall back in love with him again. And, you know, he actually might be in the mix at 3 or whatever, you know. So, like, I could see him going 9 to Seattle or whatever. So it is going to be interesting that, like, maybe he's actually going to go as high as, like, 4 to New York or whatever. So right. That's just me acknowledging, like, it sounds like his stock is going back up. But it's just such a fascinating – he's such a fascinating case study in, one, how the draft works. And, two, just, like – the bizarre, which I want to get into, like the bizarre just arcs of some of these like perfect prospects, because
yeah,
and you can go where you'd like, but like it's almost hard to quantify, and obviously I think our listeners are aware of this, but it's hard to quantify, like he was, I always use the word like a football robot with him as a freshman, but I mean mm-hmm. it because he was just the perfect prospect. Like, it was almost like, it was like the way you talk about, I don't know, like a Bryce Harper coming up, right? Or like a, like, I know it's a corner, so they're never going to get like that kind of poster talk. But in terms of he was 17 when he enrolled at LSU. And like everything he did was like a 22-year-old rookie in the NFL. Like, he was just mm-hmm. on top of everything. His technique was perfect. He was physically advanced. There's that quote from Moffitt saying he reminds him of what Fournette was like coming in. And
yep.
He was just an analytical, perfect football player. And as he was 18 that whole championship season and was the best player in the best cornerback in the country by almost any metric as an 18-year-old. So it's just like he was perfect. And it was just a matter of when, not if. And mm-hmm. so then, and it's like, you, it's not because you use the phrase, you know, things went wrong. And what makes it even weirder it's not even like things went inherently wrong. It was just like he just, to your, and you phrased this part well, it was like he just faded away. So it makes it so weird, right? Like he played, but it was just a bad team and he wasn't quite himself, but he did try to play. So it was just like he just kind of went from being like the biggest star to like, hey, there's Derek Stingley. And then this year happens, and then it's a, he was already a quiet guy. So like he was already a guy who didn't want to like be in front of the camera all the time. And freshman year, when he's having his best season, he's not even allowed to talk to the media. So right. It's like that would have been his time to like make his statement with LSU fans. Didn't get to do that. Then the pandemic hit, so nobody's talking. And like, and it's Zoom press conferences and all that. And then he's hurt, so he's definitely not talking. So it's like he didn't get a cash in on his greatest peaks. And then like he just is injured and the team falls to absolute disaster while a pandemic hits. It was like this perfect recipe of like the world just kind of forgot about Derek Stingley for 2 years. And the saddest part to me is like he has been criticized for his tape the last 2 years, which fair. I mean, like I get it, but like I put in a line in there. It was like he was damned by people by his, like by people basically weren't wondering if he really wanted to push and like try, but then he was also damned by the fact that they were over criticizing his tape when he was playing hurt. You know what I mean? Like, so it's right. Like he got the benefit of neither side of that debate. And I don't think it's perfect, by the way. We're going to get into the actual issues with Stingley in a second. It was just me kind of like reframing, like just why this fascinates me so much.
Here's the thing that strikes me as unfair to Derek Stingley. One, in any other profession in the world, what he shows in 2019, he gets a job right away.
Yeah.
Somebody hires him to do the thing that he is already one of the best people in his profession at. And somebody says, okay, you're hired. I don't care if you don't have a college degree. Like, you clearly can perform this job better than most humans on the planet. So I'm going to hire you.
Yep.
So he joins that weird cabal of college. Yeah, right. Well, sorry. That makes it sound
like I loved it. No notes.
But it's these like college players who have incredible freshman or sophomore seasons and then can't cash in. I mean, you think all the way back to like Maurice Claret or Mike Williams at USC that both did their own routes to the NFL, which neither worked out very well. But it was like if you draft Maurice Claret after a sophomore year, he's probably a first-round running back. He probably does really well in the NFL and – you know, he kind of fell out for a lot of reasons that don't pertain to Derek Stingley. But there's these uber talented players who cannot go to the NFL. And then you get to the draft part of it and how the draft works, which is fascinating and infuriating to me. We were talking before we started recording about how I was complaining to you how I think about, you know, all of these questions about Derek Stingley's character are kind of bullshit. And you were saying, well, it's not, it's kind of legit. Like these people do have questions. And I'm realizing now that I phrased it wrong in that I think it's bullshit that Derek Stingley had all these quote unquote character concerns or like people didn't know if he had the drive. They kind of thought he might be a quitter for all this kind of stuff. And then teams are actually having a face-to-face conversation with the kid for the first time. And all of a sudden they want to draft him in the top 10 again. Why does it take having a simple face-to-face conversation with Derek Stingley to completely change your mind and like pierce through what you thought before, which was clearly maybe wrong in your mind. It's just, that's so unfair. If I'm putting myself in Derek Stingley's shoes, that all you have to do is call me up on the phone and talk to me. And that's going to change your mind about this whole narrative that has now taken over his entire prospect profile for the NFL draft. You know,
no, Oh, go on.
Yeah, is that fair? Is that unfair, what I'm saying?
I mean, no, to some extent, it's totally fair. I think it's like, I think a few things are happening there. One, we just have to, it's like the biggest, I have so, like certain core things I just yell on this podcast all the time. And one of them is just the draft. And it's like, just realizing the last few months, everything we're reading is not necessarily the reality. And like, so much of these just narratives going up and down of his stock or anyone's stock for 4 months might just be wrong. Like Trayvon Walker is a great example of like, he might go and he's going to go in the top 10, might go number one or two or three.
He might go top two.
Yeah. And like, I think we all are like his rise, all this stuff. And it's like, he actually was, I believe on a lot of these teams, like the top of a lot of their boards in November, just like, but we are reading the media mock drafts, by the way, that's not me criticizing these guys. Cause the jobs that like Dane Brugler and all these guys do are off the charts. Incredible. But it's just like, we are working on limited information, and then we tell ourselves a narrative that's happening that might have never been the case. And I just think that like when you talk about like, man, can you believe this guy's falling? Because we've been reading he's number six on the board for 4 months. And it's like, actually, he might have been red flagged way months ago. And he actually was 40th on everyone's board. And you are just now being like, can't believe he's falling. And that's actually, to your point, like the Stingley example, a disservice to the kid because now he's defending this narrative that never actually was true. And sometimes they are true. I'm not like actually trying to like insult everybody. But so with someone like Stingley, like I've always had a theory that to some extent, this is all like not even that true. I do believe like the him versus Gardner debate is totally real. Like I think people love Gardner.
I mean, Sauce is awesome.
Yeah, like, he's so good. Yeah. And I do think... By the way, nobody's wrong for being like, hey, this guy's played 10 games out of 23 the last 2 years. Like, that's a real question mark. Like, of course you can ask that. Or, like, while you're still trying to gather information, it's totally fair to be like, how much did this guy really want it? Like, that stuff's fair because, like, there were, I don't think, entirely accurate kind of, like, rumors out there of, like, he didn't want to come back and all this stuff, which, like, some parts of that might be true. A lot of it aren't. So it's like... I don't know. We're on an information garnering phase and then we create it. It's like, I'm starting to get like, I was about to get very philosophical. I'm going to stop myself, but
okay.
I was about to reference dreams and I really caught myself.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But yeah. So like I still have to say, yeah, I think people were in the information garnering phase on Derek Stingley for a while. He was still recovering from his surgery and wasn't fully cleared until like a few weeks before pro day. So like the information like real like coming together part of the Derek Stingley storyline didn't happen until the past month because he didn't do the combine. He didn't really do that many interviews, things like that. So it was until or until pro day. So then pro day happens 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago, shows how good he can be. Then he finally is doing his interviews with all the teams and it's like now it's all actually coming together, if that makes sense. Well, for 3 months it was like unknown. Is that
totally
fair?
And that tracks up and it's like,
so I don't think it's just like, oh, they finally interviewed him and it's like, now we're learning we love him. I think it's like, oh, now the full story's coming out, you know?
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Yeah, I just and maybe this is the divide between NFL front offices and the media and the interesting relationships that happened there during the draft process with smokescreens. I'm not saying this is a Stingley smokescreen, but it is interesting how like people just fall and the data that matters is going to happen Thursday night when Derek Stingley, whenever he gets taken. On Dan Brugler's board, he has Stingley as the third best cornerback.
Yep.
Behind Trent McDuffie from Washington. He has Sauce Gardner as the top corner. So I'll be interested to see where, you know, a lot of people, even, you know, our other draft guys, Deontay Lee and Nate Tice, kind of think that Stingley is CB1. And like we said, he could go top five. We'll see if somebody trades up for him. we'll see if these last couple weeks of the narrative shifting on Derek could help. But it is interesting to, like, I think as LSU fans, like myself and our listeners, we should think back to 2019 Stingley and also, like, re-fall in love with the guy because, you know, the last 2 years have been so bad. But then, do you remember the Florida game? And the thing we remember is his interception late that sealed the game. He was getting torn up all game by Kyle. It is one of the maddest I've been mid-game because this guy who I didn't think was a good quarterback, Kyle Trask, that everybody else liked, just one of the most least impressive Heisman candidates I've ever seen in person. Just like, and then all of a sudden he's fitting these perfect passes in there to these great wide receivers, and Stingley's getting toasted all game. I mean, they were going score for score the entire time with one of the best offenses in college football history. And then Stingley faces adversity, getting toasted all game. And then he makes this incredible interception. And it's just like, that was just one play in like 15, 20, 30 plays he made all season that were just awesome. I think he should be cornerback one in this draft or two behind Sauce Gardner, but he's going to be a top 10 player. And I guess we have to worry about his health. I mean, shout out to the Athletic's Dan Brugler, who basically says, here, I'll read you his summary. This quote, overall, Stingley needs to stay on the field. He missed more games the last 2 years than he played because of injuries, but he is a top-tier athlete with the man coverage skills and ball instincts to stay attached on an island, which is key in NFL football. A lot of man coverage. He projects as a Pro Bowl-level NFL starter if he plays healthy. So it's like, he's still the third cornerback on your board, and like if he stays healthy, though, he could be like a top five cornerback in the league by definition with Pro Bowl level starter. Dane in his book has him going 14 overall. I think that's going to be low with this new, you know, this book came out a couple weeks ago, so things changed so quickly.
Yeah, but I think his last mock actually had him number 9 to Seattle. Yeah.
And I bet you he moves up a little bit. I bet you somebody might try to get in the top 10 to get him after these interviews and his pro day. So I'm fascinated to see it. So he is going to be the only LSU guy that probably goes on Thursday. I don't think LSU has another first round guy unless there's a big reach that I'm missing or whatever. Any other NFL draft prospects that we should talk about from LSU? I mean, we mentioned Cordell Flott, who has literally shared the stage with Stingley this entire time and has been a really solid above average cornerback for LSU that I think could make a lot of noise in the NFL as a good starter somewhere.
Yeah,
he's probably what, a third or fourth round pick last time I saw.
Yeah, I think I've seen him around fourth, hanging in that 4 or 5 range. But I could also see him going higher. I know he tested well, and he's just like somebody. I think LSU and LSU is one of those schools who you see like once a year. There's like a draft guy who, and I think I see this with receivers at LSU a lot. And I think corners the other, running back too, where it's like a guy who actually wasn't even that like special. By the way, Cordell Flott was really good last year, but like guys who didn't even like garner acclaim at LSU, and just like someone's like, oh wow, this guy's really athletic and could be really good, and ends up being a better NFL player than you'd think. And I think Cordell Flott totally fits in that category. So I'm curious to see where he ends up because he's really quick, like really, really quick. He's a really good cover, probably a good nickel in the NFL. But also he proved last year, he's like a really good tackler when he went for it. Like it was like, wow, okay. Like he had a really great year there last year. So him, the one I'm most fascinated by is Neil Farrell. Because Neil Farrell was a stud last year. Like genuinely one of the best, in my opinion, one of the best, you know, interior linemen in the country. He was so good. Got no acclaim for it other than in Baton Rouge. And I remember talking to Dane, and he was just like, yeah, no, he's rising up boards privately. Like, and I think Dane has him in the fourth round, which that's a good spot. Like, if Neil Farrell goes third round, that's a great spot for him. Good for him. Fourth isn't bad. But I could see him going even higher because he is so athletic. He is so explosive. My hot take during 2019 was he was actually sneaky. Well, Shelvin was the best, but he was sneaky the best of those DNs, like in the 3-4. Like he was the second team guy, but they basically all they split reps, right? It was like 60-40. And, you know, I know Florence and Logan were the starters on the first team, but like, Farrell made as many plays as anyone. So I love Neil Farrell. So I think he's the one I'm watching to see how high he can go. So I think those are two. Then, of course, the one we got to discuss is just like what happens to Damone Clark, right?
Yeah. I'm so bummed for Damone. I know I said on this podcast late in the year that he became one of my like favorite LSU guys of the last 5 to 10 years because of like the effort he gave, and he really took on a big leadership role late in the season. You remember he's the one who predicted that they would beat Texas A&M, which was a big underdog game, and yeah, they did. And like, I don't know, he really showed out when LSU was down, and I love him for that. And like, clearly a first couple of round talent, like a physical specimen. He became a great tackler. He was all over the place. He has great speed. And then he gets injured, and he has fallen a lot. He could be maybe a 6th or 7th round pick, if not a UFA. I feel terrible for him. I hope he recovers quickly, because and some team is going to get a steal in him if he can get healthy. What are you hearing? Have you talked to anybody more about Damone?
Yeah, I think, you know, I won't pretend I have any inside information. But yeah, I mean, it is so sad because he probably could have been, I don't know if second's accurate, but could have been a 3rd round pick at the very least, maybe a 2nd rounder, because he's so physically gifted. The upside's still there. And I don't know, he has a chance to be really great. So it's like, he's listed as a 7th rounder now, but you know how that gets later in the draft, where you're just like, hey man, like, you're not expecting your 6th or 5th round pick to start anyway. Like, maybe if they think there's real competition there, you actually just take him a little earlier because you bet on that upside and give him a year to get healthy, which is really hard to actually talk yourself into doing. But I think I saw the Bengals do it with Marcus Bailey from Purdue in the 7th round. And he's now a real rotation player because they let him, you know, sit for a while. So, yeah, it is crazy because he's a high character guy. You'd assume he's going to interview well. LSU people, which it's always the underrated part of this process, is like, how will the teams talk about him in private to the, you know, scouts and all that? They will talk very highly of Damone Clark. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm so fascinated by it because he's just one of those guys you find yourself rooting for.
I think if we can zoom out a little bit, I think
zoom away.
LSU fans need to pay attention to the tweets, however you're going to look online over the weekend. There's going to be a lot of 3rd round, 4th round, 5th round guys. You know, all the offensive linemen, Neil Farrell, Damone Clark is a 7th rounder. But there's going to be a lot of guys that go over the weekend. Maybe not in the 2nd round. I don't see any guys in the 2nd round right now. But like, Ty Davis Price is the number 11 running back on the board, according to Dane. That group of like 4 offensive linemen, Ed Ingram, Chasen Hines. He has Austin Deculus as a UFA. But like you said, when you get down there, it's like, you know, it doesn't really matter once you get past the middle of the 6th round, really. So it's going to be a big LSU weekend and a big Derek Stingley night on Thursday.
Definitely. And we're going to get so many answers about what teams actually think of Stingley.
I'm fascinated. And I really am. It's something I've really taken to heart over the last 2 years, and it sounds simple, but you really have to judge a player more on the situation that he gets into rather than the player himself, you know? And that's what I worry about guys, especially guys like Stingley with all this upside. Like, if he goes to a bad spot, then it doesn't mean he's a bad NFL player. It's just like, some of these NFL franchises are run very poorly, they're coached poorly, and they don't put these guys in a position to succeed, and all of a sudden it defines who they are. So it's going to be big for Stingley where he's going to go. I don't know. I'm fascinated. I would take him on the Saints in a heartbeat. The Saints would love another cornerback on the team. Yeah, we'll see. It's going to be fascinating, and I'll have that dual TV on too. I'll probably have my laptop and my TV, but the draft starts Thursday. The draft is always a big LSU time. It's maybe not, doesn't have the headliners of this year, but at least we got a guy up there, top 10, top 15. So it's worth a watch. Brody, do you have anything else to say on the draft?
No, I think we've gone through it well.
Well, we are in now the favorite spot of Hold That Podcast listeners. That is the last 5 minutes club that never lasts 5 minutes. But this is our discussion zone where we touch on issues that matter, like pizza toppings and fictional games between two LSU teams. So our question this week is a great question, and it centers around arguably the biggest storyline from the spring game that we have not talked about. It was that some certain 2019 LSU Tigers came to campus and really made a splash on social media. It was really cool. Joe Burrow was back. Jamar Chase was back. Clyde Edwards-Helaire was back. Justin Jefferson was there. Thaddeus Moss. Like, these already demigods of LSU football who are not yet like 25 or 26 years old. They really made a splash. I thought, on a serious note, I thought it was really cool that they were all back. That because there is that awkwardness of, you know, these guys love Coach O, and Coach O, you know, Joe Burrow talks about how much he owes Coach O his career, and, you know, they made this magic not that long ago. It's just a reminder that these guys are literal, like, young. Jamar Chase was a rookie in the NFL this year, and LSU has changed monumentally since he left 2 years ago. So it was cool to see Brian Kelly posing with Joe and Jamar and, like, really forging that relationship, you know, bringing him back onto campus. I think it was Joe's first time on campus since 2019. Am I wrong about that?
Say it again.
That was Joe's first time on campus since the title.
Correct.
Year, right?
As far as we know, yeah, that was his first time back. Yeah, so it was so kind of like a major symbolic thing.
The question is, you're going to laugh when I get to the question, because our discussion point is not about this. We have to nail down that LSU, of course, the social media posted all these videos of these guys, and, you know, it was cool and everything. But Joe Burrow and Clyde Edwards-Helaire both had these big old styrofoam cups. And I don't care. I don't need any DMs from anybody who actually knows what they were drinking. Because to me, I saw that and said, why does Joe Burrow think he's me tailgating an LSU game with a big old drink in my hand? So I choose to believe those were daiquiris. Frozen daiquiris on a game day. And my question to you, Brody Miller, what is your favorite frozen alcoholic or non-alcoholic drink to enjoy on a hot day watching a football game?
Oh, man. Okay. You said frozen or not frozen. Okay.
No. Alcoholic or non-alcoholic. It has to be frozen.
Oh, it has to be frozen. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I'm not, like, inherently a frozen bev guy. Like, I like my margaritas to be on the rocks, you know, like, and, like, I don't want, like, a frozen marg.
That's why I'm cornering you in here.
I appreciate it. I love this question. Because, you know, my favorite drink, like, in this city, as weird as I am, is, like, I am just, anytime, like, a place has a frozen Irish coffee, which luckily New Orleans is, like, elite ones, you know, Aaron Rose, Molly's, several others, I'm, like, ordered. Done. Thank you for asking. Yeah. Like, it's my favorite thing. But maybe not inherently, like, a hot day watch football beverage, right?
Exactly.
So you knew what you were doing when you cornered me here.
To pull the curtain back, everybody, for this one, I knew that Brody would agonize over it.
Yeah,
and we usually go off the cuff here. And
that's
Before we started recording, I was like, I can give you a hint. And he was like, no. And I was like, all right.
No, I have things in mind, though.
Okay, hit me.
Like, again, limited. I don't order too much. First off, I think I would, to watch a football game, I would love a frozen margarita. Like, I would do that.
Yeah.
Because I'm not a frozen guy, like, my big, as much as, like, I take inherent pride of this state that we have, like, frozen daiquiris and drive-thrus and stuff, and, like, it's my favorite thing. I don't order daiquiris often because, you know, like we just said. So I don't have, like, a flavor of daiquiri that would be my pick. Is it terrible if I said, like, I would love to drink a purple drink from Lafitte's Blacksmith while watching a football game?
You're such a tourist.
That's not touristy. They're delicious. I don't care. Like, I would crush that. So, sure. Yeah, I think that's up there. What would yours be?
So it's interesting. This question was perfect because I went to the Zurich Classic on Saturday. And like you, I normally drink margaritas on the rocks, salt on the rim. Great stuff. But I had a couple frozen margs. It was a sunny day. It was great out there, and they really hit. I even had the Bayou Rum, the brand, had a big old, like, bar, and they had a rumarita, which was frozen. It was fantastic. I think I would go with that. You know, you either go fancy and you go with these, like, really high level frozen drinks, or, like, if you're going old school New Orleans throwback, you're gonna go, like, New Orleans daiquiri shop and get some hilariously named thing that's gonna have 75 grams of sugar, but still was a big hypnotic chill guy. I don't even know what flavors those are. Probably really bad for me. I haven't had one in years. Love those. I think I'm gonna go with a frozen margarita. I will say my bougie one is also a frozen Irish coffee, and last week I had a frozen espresso martini. That was fantastic.
Oh, that's right, you were excited about that.
But it's a great question. I mean, I grew up, like, I feel like when I was younger, I was just a big, like, it's very plain to say this, but strawberry daiquiri, like, a great drink, especially Louisiana. If somebody's making them with fresh strawberries, maybe from Ponchatoula, like, what a day. doesn't have to be that way. I think the pina colada is very underrated in our lexicon of frozen drinks because it's also a cliche.
It is, yeah, you're right. Like sometimes it becomes so overrated, it's underrated.
Yeah, I think a pina colada is a fantastic frozen drink as well. I'm pretty open about my frozen drinks. I love all of them. But I like to think that Joe and Clyde had like 64-ounce daiquiris on the LSU sideline, just soaking in the atmosphere.
So first off, yeah. Like I think people have really analyzed the straw size indicates it was probably a DAC.
It was
a thick straw.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was the first to point out that it might be a daiquiri jokingly. And then all of a sudden I see like 40 tweets like really analyzing it. And I'm like, God, I love this beat. But I got to also – I want to throw one more out there for myself. Because my actual – because I get very few real off Saturdays, right? And when I do have an off, I love to like just camp out from like 11 a.m. on. With like maybe even have some like mimosas early in the morning and just like watch football. And I have been places that have some really solid frozen mimosas. So I think
Superior has a great one.
Do they? I've never ordered that. All right.
Superior seafood, not Superior.
That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah.
Also, I've Froze, you know, that would fit the category we're going for here. So I think those would probably be my picks. But I do have further thoughts on this. It's that the reasoning I don't always want to it's like because we're talking hot day, right? When I want a hot day, a lot of the entire strategy is about feeling as light as possible. Like I need lightness. It's, yes, the cold part's crucial too. Like that's why a margarita would be great. You know, on the ice, just cold, light, but it's like liquidy. And like even though I love them, so I'm not criticizing it. It's like the pizza debate. But a slush, like something frozen, there's a kind of heaviness to it, which is going against what I'm hoping for when I'm hot. So I think that's why I don't order it. But whenever I have one, I'm like, oh, this is dope. So, you know, just want to let everyone know my feelings.
I'm glad we got it all out there. The frozen drink agenda has been set. and no matter what anybody tells me, Joe and Clyde were tailgating just like I do. They're one of us now. They're just big LSU fans that happen to have a slightly larger profile in Baton Rouge than I do.
Offseason Joe's a different guy. Yeah, you got to just remember that. Absolutely.
I love it. I love it. All right, Brody, this has been a fantastic time. Everyone, like us, rate us, wherever you listen. We're going to tweet out the link, of course, after this. Actually, one more thing. We forgot to do this last week, Brody, and we almost forgot again. send in your questions. What is our emoji this week? Is there a daiquiri emoji?
I'd say any sort of daiquiri, if you could find one, or frozen drink, or just like what looks to be an alcoholic drink. I think that's the pick this week.
There is like a plastic cup drink emoji with a little straw on the top that's bent.
Sold.
That's it. It's a white cup with a red line in the middle and the red straw poking out that's like 90 degree bent. That is your emoji. Send in your questions. We'd love to hear them. And we will see you guys next week.